Welcome to the Docs Who Lift podcast, where we distill and simplify the complexities of a healthy lifestyle, exercise, medicine, and weight loss. We're excited to bring you a podcast that's a prescription for clinical practice, scientific recommendations, and just real life. This is the Docs Who Lift podcast.
Hey, and welcome back to the Docs Who Lift podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Spencer Adelsky. I got my co-host, Dr. Carl Adelsky Jr. And with us today, we have the amazing Casey Potts with us.
Hey, everyone.
Who are you, Casey Potts? What do you do? What's your background in?
That's a good question. Who the heck am I?
Who is this?
I am a full-time mom, part-time media host, part-time podcast host, and a lipedema patient and advocate.
That's right. Cool. So we wanted to get Casey on here because every 6 months I make a post about lipedema. And every single time, it, of course, it's polarizing. You get these fitness people that are like, what? This doesn't even make sense. It's just a calorie deficit. And then there's actually people from the last time I posted who will come on and be like, hey, the last time you posted, I actually went and got diagnosed with this. Thank you so much. And then I'll get the people that are like true advocates going, thank you for posting about that. And when one of them was Casey, I was like, hey, let's get you on the podcast. Cause like, we're not experts in this. We have patients with this, so we have to diagnose it. But I wanted to hear about like the patient journey, like what you went through this, you know, even getting into the stigma and some of that kind of messy stuff of getting diagnosed and going through the whole process. So that's,
and presumably for everyone out there, we'll publish this one after our initial episode with Dr. Amron, where we talk more about what the heck this is. So there's a little bit of a background for everybody.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. I mean, lipedema is something that has only been in my vocabulary for honestly less than a year. And the way that I kind of came about a diagnosis was, I mean, I can look all the way back and recognize weight loss, body image, body dysmorphia issues from as early as like 10, 11. And it was at that time that like my legs were a little chunkier and heavier than the other girls that were on my soccer team or in my dance class. And I would notice that my arms were always a little bit heavier and fuller. But my waist was always pretty small. My wrists were small. My ankles are small. And I just always felt kind of out of proportion. So that kind of started a spiral or a lifelong spiral of every fad diet, every fad exercise routine that was out there and figuring out what could I do to kind of make my body look quote unquote normal. And yeah. I grew up in a very small town in Massachusetts, and then I moved to Los Angeles almost 12 years ago now. So, you know, body image issues are not exclusive to Los Angeles. Let me tell you, they can start in the small town, and they kind of only get amplified when you live in LA.
That's amazing. What just for fun, what got you from Massachusetts to LA? That's an interesting move.
So
not a short one.
So I have always, ever since I was a little kid, I always wanted to be in the entertainment industry. I was the hear the entertainment theme song and come running into the living room to watch. And I went to school for broadcast journalism and television. Oh. And luckily, my high school boyfriend wanted to be in California too. And he's now my husband of 10 years. So.
All right. Okay, good.
Yeah, so we've been together since high school, and both always had the aspiration of moving out to LA, and we made it home.
Very cool.
Wow, very cool. Yeah. So did you ever talk to doctors when you were younger? Or how does, like, what happened? Like, you were just like, no, I just got a diet, or how was that experience?
Yeah, give some more details about how it went on, because we just talked about, you know, some of the symptoms and signs that different patients go through and, you know, some of the pain that goes with it and all that. You know, how was it different than, you know, just gaining or losing weight that is you know, we commonly see with obesity.
I mean, like I said, I've kind of always had this lifelong relationship with food and dieting. Not always a good relationship, sometimes good, sometimes not. Like I said, I went to school for television. So I remember my professor in college telling me, well, you know what, maybe your look is better suited for behind the scenes. And I was okay. You know, when she would send the tall, slender, blonde students out to do the red carpet events, and I would be on the production team, that just kind of continued to eat away at, like, okay, my body isn't normal. My body isn't what is desirable to be on television and everything. So I just kind of went through, again, cycles and cycles of diets and workout routines. And I had my daughter 7 years ago, and I did keto for the first time after I had her, and it worked a little bit, but this was like 2017, where there wasn't too much about keto. It was like, hey, eat bacon and you're good. Like, I feel like it didn't really make a big impact. And then about 2 years later, I did it again because I just felt like there were a lot more resources. There were a lot more tools out there. And I lost about 35 or 40 pounds on keto. So I was like, okay, this is great. This is the way that I feel like my body looks its best, performs its best. And then, as I'm sure you guys know, keto only works until it doesn't anymore. Mm-hmm. And it stopped working for me. So the weight came back, and life kind of got in the way, and I was just getting so frustrated. So I started working with a dietitian. I started working with a personal trainer. Again, the things that I thought were what I was supposed to do to kind of help my body. And I was at the point where I was working out 6 times a week, eating 1,200 calories a day, and doing semaglutide shots. And for 3 months, I lost 8 pounds.
So I have a question for you, though. When you did lose weight, so again,
the keto,
you know,
the keto,
during the keto diet, you did lose weight. So if, you know, for our patients with obesity, especially obesity related diseases, et cetera, when they lose that weight, that's a really good surrogate for health benefits. And there usually is a cosmetic benefit too. Mm-hmm. Can you tell everyone what your, you know, the areas, what specific areas didn't necessarily change just because you lost weight doesn't mean that, because we're talking about lipedema, right? So tell us about that.
Let's hear it.
Well, it's funny because in retrospect, like, I didn't know what I didn't know at this point.
Yeah,
like, sure.
I didn't realize that no matter what I did, my arms weren't getting any sort of muscle tone. I didn't realize that my legs weren't getting any sort of muscle tone. And, the feeling that I would feel in my arms and my legs, I would feel these granular, it felt like I had bags of rice underneath my skin. And I honestly, like, I feel like this is like a media thing. I just assumed, oh, that's cellulite. Like, that's what cellulite feels like. It's lumpy. And come to find out, that's such a telltale sign of lipedema, is this granular, almost like, it can be as small as like a rice texture or like as big as like a walnut texture under your skin.
That's exactly what's in that. I mentioned in the other podcast, the lipedema.org, the Lipedema Foundation, they describe it exactly like that. They talk about rice, walnuts type stuff.
Yeah. And I just, again, I don't go around feeling other people's legs and arms and everything. So I just thought that's what fat felt like. And even at my lowest weight, I still had these disproportioned kind of arms and legs.
Yeah.
You know, my waist was super tiny. I kind of looked a little off balance, but again, in the world of Kardashians, like, it's not the weirdest thing either, you know, like, to have this small waist. So I just kind of chalked it up to, this is the way that my body's going to be. But that was, again, that was on keto. And that was when I was eating such a strict diet, and on a much more scrutinizing workout plan. But then again, it didn't work that second time when I was trying to do it like a year and a half ago.
Yeah.
So then what happened? How'd you come across this condition?
So like I said, so working out 6 times a week, eating 1,200 calories a day, and doing semaglutide shots every week, and I lost 8 pounds. And my dietitian was like, this is impossible. There's something else going on here with all this stuff that you're doing. You cannot just be losing this little amount of weight, and your body composition isn't changing. Your measurements aren't changing. Like, something's going on.
And you were healthy, right? Yeah. I mean, oh, yeah. Like, if you were checking lipids and sugars, yeah, you were metabolically very healthy.
Yes.
It was just these areas that were what you described.
Totally. And like, we did full blood panels and everything to make sure there weren't thyroid issues and, you know, all of the above. We're really trying to check all the boxes and figure out what's going on. So she, at this point, was like, can I just take your case to one of my colleagues, at, like a peer board kind of to review? And she came back and she was like, so I talked to one of my colleagues and she asked if I had you look into the term lipedema, because it's something that she has and your symptoms sound an awful lot like her.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Well, small world. Well, I guess it's not super small, because one in 10 people might have it, but
right, there you go. It's not 10%. That uncommon.
No, exactly.
But, well, it's not, people don't commonly know it though.
Yeah, exactly. It's the awareness, which is hence why we're doing this.
Yeah.
No, that's exactly it. And so at that point I went down the Google rabbit hole and started searching lipedema and seeing these arms and legs that looked like mine. And I happened to find a lipedema and a lymphedema specialist in Santa Monica. So I went down to her office. Her name's Dr. Emily Eicher. And I was in her office for 30 seconds, fully clothed. And she looked at me. She goes, oh, yeah, you have lipedema. I'm like,
wow.
30 seconds across, you know, decades of things that any other doctor I've gone to could never tell me. And it was always just that, well, you know, like you said earlier, calories in versus calories out, or just stay away from carbs, stay away from sugars, try, you know, an anti-inflammatory diet, which kind of is what keto is in some senses. And that's why it does work for lipedema patients, is an anti-inflammatory diet. But I knew that there was something else going on, and I felt so relieved. It was like this weird weight lifted off of me, but then also like, okay, well, what does this mean? This means that it isn't something completely in my control now. So it got
Well, so what did you do?
Yeah.
So
what happened?
He gave me a list of conservative treatments. So conservative treatments can be anything from compression pump therapy, manual lymphatic drainage massages, dry brushing, compression garments that you can wear, vibration plates, like I said, an anti-inflammatory diet. And then she said, you know, and if you want to go the surgery route, there are surgical options. And I'm someone who, if you tell me I have a problem and here's the solution, but you can try all this other stuff first, but there's a stairway over here to the solution, I'm going to take the stairs. So I went and I researched some of the surgeons that she referred me to. I ended up doing my consultation with Dr. Amron, and I felt like his track record was really good. And I'm like, listen, if you have access to one of the best, like, that's who you go for. So that's kind of what I did. And I had a set of 2 surgeries with him. Again, so I was diagnosed stage 2, type 3, 4. So I was an early stage diagnosis. So that was why I was looking at it as like, I'm going to nip this in the bud. I'm going to do the surgery early. And Dr. Amron has patients that go from stage 0 all the way to stage 4. So he really can run the gamut, where other doctors kind of specialize in certain stages and would rather get a more preventative kind of approach, or they do large volume extraction and removal, that's their specialty. But Dr. Amron had a good spectrum of patients, and I just felt like I was in really good hands with him. So I did the 2 surgeries. First one was in October, second one was in January, and I am finally on the other side of it. But what I tell everyone is, like, I'm not done. It's not like I don't have lipedema anymore. I have lipedema. He kind of gave me a reset button, where it's now my responsibility to manage it and to maintain those conservative treatments that I mentioned that, you know, Dr. Eicher gave me, and kind of just figure out how to live with it and not let it be a life sentence. But like I said, manage it.
Yeah. Did you have pain before did it improve the pain? Like some of that stuff, some of the other things in addition to just like the cosmetic aspect, the heaviness, the pain, all that stuff.
So it's funny because, like I said, I didn't know what I didn't know. And I didn't realize that I had this whole list of symptoms that were totally on the mark for lymphedema that I just thought were normal. So some of them include super easy bruising in my arms and legs. Like I would wake up and be like, how the heck did that happen? Like, where did I even fall or what did I hit? But it could be something as easy as just like leaning up against the bathroom counter the wrong way or something, and a bruise would form. And then if a pet would jump on my lap or if my daughter would put her elbows on my lap, it would throb for a good 30 seconds. But again, I've had fat thighs my whole life. So I'm like, that's what fat feels like. But apparently it's not normal. And yeah, just like little symptoms like that, where I just had this heaviness in my legs that I assumed was because of the size of my legs. But there's such a different heavy, dense feeling to lymphedema that I didn't realize wasn't normal.
That's so interesting. What was the surgery like? Like, what is it in recovery and
yeah, so
all that type of stuff.
So my first surgery was my upper leg. So it was a 360 approach to my, basically like my hip to my knee on both legs. And it is a very specialized form of liposuction, basically, which if I can tell you the shame that came around getting this surgery.
Oh, no.
Such really? A mental, like, I think that there's a huge part of this disease that doesn't get talked about, and it's the mental component. Like, I wish that all these doctors' offices and surgical centers had a mental health component to help patients because walking in to that surgery or even just like scheduling my surgery and telling my friends and family about it and just, you know, just like you asked, like, what is this surgery? Saying the word liposuction, all I could think about was like in Legally Blonde where she wouldn't give her alibi because she was having liposuction. Oh, no.
It's stigma. You feel shame. Boy, you're feeling shame.
Stigma. And, yeah.
You're feeling shame.
Bias and all the stuff we talk about. Wow.
And even, you know, if I'm being completely honest with you, even saying what lipedema is when you have to explain it to someone, I try so hard not to use the word fat because as soon as you use the word fat, an eye will roll. Okay. Like, yeah, you just diet and exercise. Like, you don't have a fat disorder, but actually you do.
Well, and in fact, you know, he was telling us that there was a bariatric surgeon in Europe who is like kind of a loud voice trying to claim that this is not a real thing, which is sad to hear.
Well, I constantly am waiting for someone to pull the rug out from under me and say, lipedema isn't real, and no, you're just overweight.
You saw my comment section, right?
Yeah. So, exactly. Because that's what we as patients have been faced with for so long. And that's the response that we've gotten from everyone in a white coat that we've brought these concerns and these symptoms to. And it's very often, like I've told the team over at Dr. Amron's office, that women who have lipedema are so used to and conditioned to being dismissed by the medical field that we don't want to be the squeaky wheel. We don't want to bring up if something feels wrong or something feels abnormal. So like follow-ups with lipedema patients are super important. Like you need to call us. We're not going to call you. You need to call us and check on us because we don't want to be that burden. We've constantly been told like, no, just go for an extra walk. No, just reduce your calories. So I think that there's just, like I said, this mental component of pre-op, post-op, just ways to understand this condition isn't just a fat condition. It is a connective tissue disorder. It's an autoimmune disease. Like there's so many components to it that I don't feel like get talked about very much to kind of give it that holistic answer as to what lipedema actually is.
Well, and we don't know much about it still. It's a very fledgling science pathology that, I mean, and that's part of why it does get dismissed because obesity in itself is a kind of a young science.
Yeah.
We have these same exact issues with the disease of obesity as specialists and endocrinologists and surgeons, you know, for the same exact kind of thing, except that this is a whole different pathology. And then that's even harder for people to grasp because as Dr. Amron noted, I don't think I recall anybody ever.
It was never mentioned in med school
because it wasn't.
It's never.
It's not really a well-known entity. It's just a. It's a relatively new understanding, and we still don't understand everything. We don't understand everything about obesity, and let alone this different disorder that. And of course, then they can. They like he was saying, they can exacerbate each other too, which is unhelpful. And there's already all the stigma and everything that, and then this is just even worse.
Right.
Hmm. So you think Dr. Amron should get a behavioral health? Let's shoot him this podcast and be like, come on, dude.
Okay. I'm
sure.
I'm kidding. I'm working with their team as an ambassador and everything, because I feel so passionate about the advocacy, and because if I didn't continue to go and work with dietitians and nutritionists and everything and be like, no, something else is going on, we would have never figured this out. And I mean, to be completely frank, I was down the road of scheduling consultations for plastic surgery and for like the mommy makeover, because I just couldn't take it anymore. I'm like, what is going on? Something isn't clicking. Like, is this a hormonal thing that my body just doesn't want to work? And come to find out, had I gone and gotten like any sort of traditional liposuction, I could have completely damaged my lymphatic system and ended up with lymphedema.
That's a pretty good point. And I don't think we got into that with Dr. Amron, even though we talked about, you know, more subspecialization in this and trying to, you know, get more people doing it. And I know you're not a doctor with the medical background, but I mean, maybe just from, you know, from a layperson perspective to tell everyone else, why is that? What, like, do you know the basics as to why you shouldn't just go get liposuction randomly and until you make sure that this is...
Yeah.
Like so maybe nobody should.
The way that it's been explained to me a couple different ways. So, and any doctor can correct me if I'm wrong. I'm glad you gave me the disclaimer. I am not a professional. that first of all, the actual cells are different. Like adipose tissue and lipedema tissue look very different, like when you take them out. So it really takes a very specialized tool and surgeon to go in on that safe plane, where I know Dr. Amron talks a lot about. It's like there's actually a certain layer that you go in to get that lipedema and to spare the lymphatic system, because I guess there's risk of damaging lymphatic system in any sort of liposuction, but it just becomes even more sensitive or more fragile to someone with lipedema.
Sure.
Okay. Very interesting. Yeah. Wow. Thanks so much for coming on. I don't know if you want to share anything else, but I think this is very powerful to kind of go after the, you know, Dr. Amron's podcast to kind of just talk about it from a patient aspect. And what do you got two surgeries. What are you're just kind of advocating for it now? And,
and your results. I mean, how are you feeling?
I'm feeling good. I am, let's see, about almost 5 months out from my leg surgery. And it's funny because now all those things, like I mentioned, that I didn't even realize were issues before, I'm like, oh, wait, it doesn't like creak when I'm going up the stairs. My knees aren't creaking when I'm going up the stairs. And I'm not feeling those nodules. I don't have all the bruising and everything. Definitely, even something so small as like being able to blow dry my hair with my arms up above my head for a long time and not have that sore, heavy feeling has been kind of cool. But no, I really am just kind of at the advocate part, and I'll share with you guys, I am so passionate about getting these, this information out to a younger demographic, because if 15-year-old Casey could understand lipedema and understand that it wasn't her fault or that it was something that was in her genes and in her DNA and just part of her body, like the amount of body image dysmorphia and everything that could have been saved. So I am working, I'm creating an organization called Beyond Lipedema that is geared towards millennials and younger to kind of provide resources and education for a new generation around lipedema.
Well, that's awesome. Because mental health, boy, we got to do better. So that's a big deal. Prevent some of the mental health deterioration for sure.
That getting, I'm creating a brochure that's going that my goal is to get it into the hands of middle school and high school guidance counselors, school nurses, pediatricians, gynecologist's office, that is just a little bit more user-friendly than some of the information that's out there, and really kind of just talk to what it is, what it could feel like, what it could look like, and kind of some conservative methods of treatment to manage it.
Yeah.
I love that's it. Awesome. We'll make sure we share that too.
Yeah.
Very good. Where can people find you?
You can find, I'm a millennial. I hang out on Instagram.
You're on the Instas.
I'm on the Instas.
Man, you millennials, I'm a Gen Xer. I'm old. I can barely function on this thing.
You're welcome anytime. My Instagram is it's Casey Potts.
Very good. Well, Casey, we're going to share all your stuff. We're going to promote you and your new organization and everything and the link and on my Instagram stories. And thank you for coming on. We'll probably, maybe at some time we'll have you and Dr. Amron come on and chat about this. Cool. Maybe
thank
a round
you so
table.
Much.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Thank you. Thank you. Here's our outro.
This podcast is for entertainment and education and information purposes only. Remember, the physicians on this podcast are not your physician. It should not be considered professional or personalized medical advice. It should not be used to replace speaking with your physician or medical professional to discuss your specific health concerns. The topics discussed should not be used solely to diagnose or treat any condition. As a result, we are not responsible for any unwanted medical outcomes. The views and opinions discussed are of those of the host only and do not represent those of any other entities. We'll be right back.